afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. It's a large and unsafe encampment, but Seattle officials are saying, we're not going to move it. And that's What's Trending, brought to you by Legacy Group Capital Northwest Fund.
What's Trending? The homelessness crisis.
Now, it's on a sidewalk right by the Seattle Center. And this sidewalk has been taken over by the homeless. It started with one, then two, then several tents went up. Some might be from that nearby encampment that we talked about finally getting addressed a few weeks ago. I think it was on Stuart Varney's show on Fox Business. He goes, well, where are they going to go? I go, well, probably just a few blocks away, honestly, because we don't really have any kind of enforcement. We don't have any teeth. And that's probably what happened here. But in any case, they're openly smoking fentanyl. There's been an increase in theft nearby, on top of the fact that they're just living in squalor outdoors. And the city is like, we don't feel like sweeping this. We're going to take a hard pass. Now, they don't tell us why it's not being prioritized. They just tell us it's not being prioritized. Now, one of the guys who lives there. His name is Brian. He actually goes by the nickname Bama because he's apparently from Alabama. And he spoke with Como TV. And he said he's trying to make a point by living in this particular high-profile spot.
We needed people to see us. We needed people to know that we are the ones that got skipped over. If I could get in an apartment, I could get a job. I have a driver's license. You know, I would be able to keep myself clean.
Got it. I mean, it sounds like all he needs is some help, right? That's a pretty sympathetic character, it sounds like. Except everything he just said there is nonsense. It's all nonsense. Number one, we do see you. We know you're there. And you haven't actually been skipped over. You see, this guy has been homeless, he said, for a decade. Now, a decade without having any contact with anyone from the city or the county or from nonprofit world is impossible. It is impossible. I suspect that he just might not remember all of the times in which they've been in contact, including when they were just in contact with him not long ago from the city. Why?
I use fentanyl.
Okay, that's going to be a little bit of a problem. You see, he's a drug addict. Now, he doesn't think he's a drug addict. He thinks he's getting by. He thinks there's no issue whatsoever.
I only need a small amount to get through my day.
Yeah, just a little tiny bit. Just a little tiny bit. And it's not impacting his life at all, except for the whole not holding down a job and living outside thing. But other than that, I mean, it's not really impacting.
And I have plans to quit in the real near future.
Just like so many people have plans to finally go to the gym, finally start that diet, finally, you know, commit to reading one book a month. I mean, he's been, you know, he's been committed to this for decades, probably for years.
You know, fentanyl is a funny drug. If you don't use and you don't have a habit, then anytime you buy it, you could die.
But there are a lot of people dying, Brian.
There's a lot of people dying. And, you know, I hate that.
Oh, I'm sure you are all torn up over it. I'm sure he's a nice guy. You see, he legitimately seems friendly. I'm going to go introduce myself. I'm going to go try to talk to him. Kind of just curious. I'm naturally curious. And I suspect that there's a lot more to this story that explains precisely why it is he lives there. Although, let's be clear, we just pretty much heard most of the details that explain it. And yet, we're supposed to pretend that this is a guy just like you and me, one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. No, most people aren't one missed paycheck away from living out on the streets. Now, there's some people who are, and they require a level of assistance that's different from a guy like this. This is a guy who can be offered shelter right this moment. And unless it's an apartment, he's going to say no. I guarantee you, I believe that he has been asked many, many, many times to go with social workers to a shelter, and he has said no. And as a result of that selfishness, that inability to understand that what he's doing right now is not in his best interest, he and others are camped out there causing problems for folks who either live or work nearby, or just an embarrassment for the city, because this is right off of Mercer where a ton of people drive. Now, the council member for this district is Bob Kettle. He spoke to Como.
We're engaging with the Unified Care Team. Encampments at one point become a danger. It becomes a drug market, becomes a stolen goods market.
Now, you know, it's not really at one point. It's immediate. We know immediately that it's unsafe. Now, it doesn't always immediately become a drug den or a crime hotspot. It eventually does become that, some quicker than others. But it's automatically dangerous for these people to live outside, vulnerable to the elements, vulnerable to security threats. Most of the time dealing with an addiction or a mental health issue that hasn't been addressed. And we just allow them to stay. But seriously, it just, all he needs is one offer of help.
So if somebody was to show up and say, Ryan, we'll get you the help you need. We'll get you off the fentanyl. We'll get you off the heroin. We'll get you housing. Would you take it?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe he's the one that got away, the one person who has not been offered any help, even though the city put out a statement to Como and said that he's been offered help, like even semi-recently. Now, to be clear, the city is enabling this kind of situation. They're enabling this behavior. They're going to his encampment and cleaning up after him. They're making it more hospitable. If you're dealing with someone who doesn't want to get off the streets, you don't make it even easier to live on the streets. It should be quite the opposite. You should be making it more difficult, more onerous. Because for some people, not everyone, but for some, you really need to offer some tough love. We all agree, except for the fringe of the fringe, that being indoors is better than living outdoors, at least under these circumstances. I know some people want to call them urban campers. No, they're homeless people. They're homeless people who are dealing with a significant issue that drove them to this homelessness. And rather than help, rather than do the moral thing, we'll just let him eventually die of an overdose. I mean, he has lasted a decade. He'll probably last an extra 10. And if not, hey, think of it this way. It's 9.5 years more than what people probably would have assumed he would live. Glass half full, am I right? I honestly think that that's how they view things. Because otherwise, how do you explain a lack of urgency? I get that you only have so many resources to go around and so many staff. I get that. But it's not like they're seeing a whole bunch of success stories where they're just inundated with, you know, a long list of people that social workers have as their clients, trying to coach them into housing and into a job. It's not, that's just not happening. They mean well, but it's not working. And it's not going to work.
Maybe they just don't care.
No, I think they do care. I mean, some probably don't. I think the vast majority really do care. They're just not good at their job. And I don't know if it's because people are putting handcuffs on them at the city level or the county level, or I guess the state level. I don't know. I don't know if they're just big believers in the whole idea of harm reduction and housing first. They're just true believers and they're ignoring all of the data that shows both of those policies just do not work. But I think ultimately them meaning well doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Because their result is pretty much the same as if they didn't care. If the end result is the same, you know, at some point you can say, well, I'm glad you at least care. I feel a little bit better about paying you to do a job that you truly care about. But you know what? God bless you. It's just not working out.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah. So you either figure out how to do things differently or you get a new job. Now, at the city level, they don't want to really figure out how to do things differently. They've been doing it exactly the same way over and over and over again, and this is the result. This is the result. Well, maybe not him, because obviously he's been overlooked. I mean, he said that multiple times, despite all of the documentation that suggests otherwise. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Anti-Semitism.
Well, this is a nice, pleasant surprise for a Tuesday. Ian Golash, the controversial teacher in Seattle Public Schools, he's at Chief South High School, or at least he was. We've been telling you about him for months. This is a guy who traffics in anti-Semitism. He brings it into the classroom. It's pretty disturbing. Well, he's just been placed on administrative leave. It's paid administrative leave, but dealing with teachers' union, that's actually saying something. This, at least according to his father. Now, for those of you who don't recall, he did an interview a week and a half ago in which he said the October 7th attacks were justified, where you don't get to choose how to fight against oppressors. The oppressed get to choose. He questioned whether or not rape occurred against innocent Israeli women by Hamas terrorists, of which, by the way, doesn't call them terrorists. Don't think he believes them to be terrorists. But he did this interview with Adam Gillette, our friend from Accuracy in Media.
I think one child dying is terrible, but I would never endorse killing women at a music festival. But you said that was merely resistance to oppression. Is that right?
No, that's not what I said.
Your post said that their oppressors don't get to choose the form of resistance used against them. You didn't write that?
That is true.
Oh, okay.
Well, then was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
Okay. It's pretty clear where he stands. Seems really clear. Now, he doubled, well, actually tripled down on his Facebook page after he did this interview. I think it was even before it was officially released, in which he just again states his point. But I was curious what happened to this guy, and I think we mentioned it yesterday. I heard from a couple parents who said he wasn't in class and they were told he is out for the rest of the year. And so I reached out to SPS and said, hey, can you give me a comment? Knowing that they wouldn't give me a comment, and they did not give me a comment, at least one that's relevant here, because they can't talk about personnel issues, I'm told. But then I noticed on his Facebook page, he's got a dad whose Facebook page is shockingly similar in content. He was complaining about how the Zionists were attacking his son, but one of his posts was that his son, Ian, quote, has been placed on paid administrative leave for the rest of the semester for speaking out against genocide in Gaza. Oh, is that what he was doing? He has been told not to speak to any students or teachers in the Seattle school system. Now, obviously, I don't know if that part's accurate. I don't. I hope it's accurate. I reached out to Ian Golash, not really on his list of people to respond to, I guess, which is very hurtful. I didn't even mention at the end of the email, I didn't sign it with my personal pronouns slash Jew, which I almost did, but then I thought it would be a little bit unprofessional of me. Now, the statement I got from Seattle Public Schools, regarding your question about placing an educator on administrative leave, SPS is looking into the matter. While a review is in process, we will not comment on personnel matters related to this topic. I'm going to guess that it's accurate. Maybe not all the specific details, but the whole part about not being back in the class. Some people said, but he's still keeping his job. I don't know the answer to that. This is a good first step. This is a good first step. I think the school is doing a horrible job when it comes to messaging around this. Had Adam Gillette not captured this particular answer from him on camera, this would not have happened. The school has been well aware of his anti-Semitism inside of the classroom and on Facebook. They've been well aware of this for months. And obviously, I only started looking into him after October 7th. I would not be surprised if we went back years and looked at curriculum, which, by the way, I'm doing, and wouldn't find something very similar to this. They got complaints from students. They got complaints from parents. And they did absolutely nothing, to the point where right in front of him, talking to Adam Gillette, a student said this.
Hey, good afternoon. What do you think about Ian Golash and his anti-Semitism? What are your thoughts?
I don't like it, honestly. How has he not been fired yet? That's my main question. How has he not been fired yet? I mean, he's I've read his posts. He's anti-Semitic. And he's a criminal, I think.
I think he's been arrested a couple times.
Yeah, why is the school allowed to do that? Why is the district allowed to hire him?
Have you had him as a teacher?
I actually am a part of his class right now. He's taking us out as an example of free speech.
God, I love that kid. Give him a podcast. Just complaining about all the woke stuff.
He's so well-spoken.
Right, too. He really is. And maybe I have just such a low opinion of kids that he's impressive to me. Because I guess in my head, they can't string together a full sentence or put their phones down long enough to actually have a conversation with someone. But he gets it. And he wasn't the only one.
I just admire that he was willing to say all that, and like his teacher was like standing like right next to him.
Now that's cool. Or what the kids say. Based.
Right.
The kids say that.
They do.
The ones who are definitely not annoying. The ones who are really hip to it all. Speaking of an update, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Last week, we broke a story that has since gone not just national, but international. The Borderline Dance Team, it's a regional team. They were invited to the Emerald City Hoedown in Seattle a couple weekends ago. And unfortunately, they said the organizers, the Rain County Dance Association, who had invited them, said, you're going to have to take off your shirts. They were themed around the American flag. They apparently were divisive. They triggered and made people feel unsafe. Well, it's gotten a lot of attention, so I thought we would check back in with the co-captain of the team, Lindsay Stamp, who joins me for an exclusive. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So did you ever think or expect that a story like this would explode the way that it did?
Absolutely not. It's been very hectic. It was a big surprise. Most of the feedback that we're getting from the community is so incredibly positive, which is absolutely wonderful, you know, with a little negative sprinkled here and there.
Well, tell me about the positive, because I think it's pretty great that people have been speaking up in a big way to say, get over it. It's the American flag. There's nothing divisive at all.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's great. I mean, we've had veterans, we've had active military reach out to us. We've had people from Australia reach out to us, people from Canada, people from all over really saying, hey, we stand behind you. This is not okay. You live in America. It's the American flag. Like there's a little confusion surrounding it. Like, why is this a problem? And, some people are a little angry about it, which is understandable. We're just saying, you know, let us handle it. And it just, great positive feedback. Obviously a few opportunities have come our way as well, which is really nice.
What kind of opportunities?
So we were invited by the selection chair of the, it is the selection chair for the Normandy, France D-Day commemoration in Normandy, France. He reached out and invited us to come on over and join in their celebrations in the parade. And there's two wreath-laying ceremonies and a music festival. And so we are doing some fundraising right now, hoping we can make that happen for both of our teams.
Oh, that's amazing. That's insane.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you've been heartened by the response. There are some, obviously there's going to be some negativity. How do you not allow that to get to you guys?
I think you just can't. You just let it kind of roll off your shoulder, and obviously there's negatives definitely going to both sides, and that's not okay. We don't condone that kind of behavior at all. You just let it roll off your shoulder, and you get up and you put your face on, you go to work every day just like you normally do.
Well, the Rain County Dance Association, they put out a statement a couple times basically saying they're going to contact you guys and work through any sort of miscommunication. So what's the conversation been like with them?
It's all email correspondence, and unfortunately it's a little foreign, you know, we're kind of taking a little while to get back to each other as we can share the email with our fellow team members and make sure that we're responding in a way that we want to, that's clear. They're apologetic, and they're real nice. They're real nice, real diplomatic people. Very apologetic about it. And I think at this point, they're just trying to kind of conduct their own investigation and find out what happened on their end.
So when they say what happened on their end, I'm assuming you're dealing with people who you did not originally speak to on the day in question.
That is correct. Yes.
And I'm assuming you think that they're acting in good faith here, right? In doing an investigation, trying to figure out exactly what happened?
Absolutely. I believe so, yes.
What's your expectation then at the end of this? Because, you know, I trust you and the other team that had spoken to me and said basically the same exact story. So I don't think there's a question as to what happened. There might be a question as to the process and why it happened the way it did. But assuming all of the details are, you know, discovered in their quote unquote investigation, what do you expect to happen?
What do I expect to happen? I don't know what I expect to happen, but I tell you what I would like to happen. I would like to see just an acknowledgement that what happened was wrong, that it wasn't okay to do, that we shouldn't have been made to change our shirts, that we shouldn't let the minority of the population speak for the majority of everybody else. And that's basically what it comes down to. You know, you can't unring that bell. We can't go back and do it all over again. And I'm sure we all wish we could, but at this point, it's just acknowledgement that this kind of behavior has to stop. It has to stop.
Do you think you'll be invited back? And if so, would you go?
You know, I'm not sure if we'd be invited back or not at this point. Would we go? Again, that decision would have to go to the whole team.
What about you? So. You personally?
Me?
How would you
me
vote?
Me personally? I think it depends on the way that it rolls out. If it pans out that we can acknowledge that this was something that shouldn't have happened and that it was wrong, I would be open to going back. But if not, then it's probably not an option for me personally.
Yeah, no, it's totally understandable. Hopefully this gets figured out. Again, I'm glad that you got a lot of positive coverage in all of this. I know that Fox News has been all over it. I've been on Fox News talking about this, Daily Mail, the New York Post. Yeah. So turns out the Jason Arendt Show gets stories covered everywhere. Weird how that works. We've been talking with Lindsay Stamm. She's the co-captain of the Borderline Dance Team. If you want to learn more about the team, maybe you're interested in country line dancing, check out their Facebook page. Just look up Borderline Dance, and it's the first one that pops up. Give it a like and follow along and reach out if you have any interest in participating. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Arendt Show. We're back with more after this. Welcome back to The Jason Arendt Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. I had to rewatch some video a few times from the Snohomish County Council. And I know that that sounds terribly boring. I get it. But there was a conversation that was so astronomically dumb and dishonest that I had to. I literally did. Wait, did I hear that correctly? Y'all are defending the safety of being in a home that is contaminated with drugs so much that it would basically qualify as a meth lab. You're pretending that there's nothing unsafe? Not even a little bit? Because that's what Democrats on the council, at least two of them, are doing. They falsely claim that there's no evidence, no clear evidence, that drug contamination is harmful. And the reason why this is coming up is because our friend, my friend, Nate Nehring, Snohomish County Councilman, he introduced an ordinance that's actually pretty simple and non-controversial. Like so many other counties, Snohomish County made the mistake of spending tens of million dollars or committing tens of millions of dollars overall to acquiring land, old hotels, for example, and turning them into permanent supportive housing for the homeless. Permanent supportive housing. And at the time, Nate Nearing and Sam Lowe, the other council member who's a Republican on the council, said, can we at least drug test each and every one of them because we don't want them using drugs? Democrats were all like, no, we don't stigmatize drug use. Yeah, but you do realize that they're just going to die in their homes. No, I don't care. Oh, okay. And so Nate had a different idea. How about this? You say you want them to be healthy. That's what you claim to want. This ordinance will mandate drug contamination tests within the housing units because we want to protect the health of the homeless residents. We want to protect the health of anyone who visits. Drug contamination, bad. Now, again, seems not all that controversial. They were talking specifically about meth because that had already forced the shutdown of four homeless housing properties in Snohomish County. Do you remember that? Like, it was so dangerous, one of them. They had to remove people from it and then do their remediation. They had to actually get it taken care of. And so this seems really sensible. However, you've got two fringe Democrats on this council. And the first one, who also happens to be a state representative, Strom Peterson, he had some problems with the ordinance.
I have some pretty serious reservations, particularly around the testing of somebody's individual residence.
Oh, but see, it's their individual residence that we're paying for, that actually we own, not the individual who's in it, just as an FYI.
I think we can run into some pretty significant constitutional issues, privacy issues. I think also folks that are in permanent supportive housing, this is a very challenging population, often with very serious mental health issues. And so I think the idea of testing individual residences initially has those barriers.
I just want to clarify with our friend Strom, who did not respond to a request for comment. Like, if one of the drug users accidentally sets their home on fire, can the firefighters go in? Because they're agents of the government. Are there not constitutional problems?
What part of the Constitution is he referencing?
I mean, I assume he's meaning like search and seizure.
I don't think that's what James Madison had in mind.
But very clearly that wouldn't apply here for the same exact reason I just pointed out when it comes to safety. This is about safety. This is about safety. I mean, can Elle and I go on to some properties where there are complaints about work conditions? Yeah. Can they close them down? Yeah. Now, no one here is saying the government should just knock on doors and start randomly doing drug testing. But we should be saying on government property in which we're allowing drug use, you probably want to make sure that it's not so contaminated with drugs that the person merely living there is now at risk of death. Because there might be some other legal issues when it comes to that. But then he gets into, and you really know where this is going after he decides to say, and actually, is drug contamination even unsafe? I mean, who are you to say that it's unsafe? The studies are actually clear in the other direction. Turns out it's like super healthy to be around.
And why I have some hesitation with this is there are kind of the state agencies and state health department are working on trying to figure out if there is, even if there are significant health effects, I serve on the community transit board, and when they tested the buses, there was contamination. They set up a cleaning protocol, but there's still not science known that if you sit in a bus seat and the seat next to you has some sort of surface contamination, if that even has an effect. Actually, most of the science is showing that it does not have a detrimental effect to that kind of casual contact.
Well, that's kind of odd. Why'd you bring up something about casual contact versus living in a home that is contaminated with drugs? That's kind of odd that you would come up with something that has nothing to do at all with this issue. It's not comparable. Now, what he's referring to, and we covered this at the time, the University of Washington was hired to come up with a study that would basically say what he just did, which is, oh, it's perfectly okay. Why? Because at the time, you had Sound Transit and King County Metro bus drivers complaining about the amount of fentanyl and other drugs that were being consumed on the bus, and it was making them sick. And they had a record high number of complaints about their personal health as a result of being around this. And so this, the Sound Transit, King County Metro, Community Transit, there were so, whatever the program is in Portland, they got together and said, okay, let's get this propaganda, this study together so that we can prove that we're right and you're wrong and not have to get into any lengthy and potentially costly battles with the unions representing all of the bus drivers. So they came out with their study and it showed that, well, yeah, it was overwhelmingly contaminated with illicit substances. Researchers found that meth was on 98% of the surfaces that they sampled. And it was 100% in the air that they sampled. Fentanyl was 46% on the surface, 25% in the air. Now, he makes all of these claims about the health in that clip. The main objective of that study was to give an exposure assessment. That's it. Meaning they just wanted to see how much people were being exposed to. They didn't look at whether or not the passengers or even the drivers were getting sick in the short or long term. They didn't look at that. They didn't look at that at all. In fact, let me read directly from the researchers. This assessment did not characterize short or long term health outcomes associated with secondhand exposure to fentanyl or methamphetamine. Huh. But he said the opposite. Didn't he say the opposite, or did I misunderstand him?
I think he said the opposite.
Yeah, he said the opposite. And so he brings up this irrelevant study and says, actually, most of the studies say X, Y, and Z. Except that's not true. Because I looked up studies. I have access to something called the internet. And I typed into the internet. It's called a search bar. Have you ever heard of such a thing? It is amazing. Google, goggles, something like that. And I typed in study, meth, housing, safety, contamination. You just like put words in it, keywords, I think they're called, right? And lo and behold, I found a recent study from 2020. That's like 4 years ago. Oh my gosh. And it reviewed the health impacts associated with living in homes contaminated by, wait for it, meth, which is precisely what it is they're talking about in Snohomish County. And the researchers found it crystal clear. It creates adverse health reactions, specifically behavioral and sleep disturbances, respiratory issues, and dermatological symptoms amongst the people there. Then I found the 2017 study that looked at a family that had lived in a former meth drug lab. Okay? Former. The family members, in particular the kids, had elevated levels of meth in their hair, which led to respiratory difficulties and behavioral changes. When they moved out, for the most part, but not entirely, the health effects went away, but not all. Now, those are just two studies that I found after spending maybe 13 and a half seconds Googling. Okay? And yet, our friend Strom Peterson, I guess, couldn't figure it out. It's amazing. Now, there's also a council member, Molotov Megan Dunn. You remember Molotov Megan Dunn? You know how she got that nickname? She had posted during the riots for Black Lives Matter a little patch that showed a Molotov cocktail being thrown. And she messaged it around like, be the change you want to see in the world or something like that. She was seemingly endorsing the whole throwing of Molotov cocktails, which it's my understanding that that's bad.
Well, they were mostly peaceful protests, Jason.
They were mostly peaceful Molotov cocktails.
Fiery, but mostly peaceful.
Definitely fiery. And so she, during this discussion, took exactly the same position as Strom, but she took a weird one that just factually didn't make any sense. Like, logically, it didn't make any sense. She kept criticizing the fact that under this ordinance, because there's no standard set by the state for having to decontaminate a contaminated household. They only looked at labs. So she's all like, there's no housing contamination standard. The only one we have is the lab. Now, I pulled a little bit longer of an audio cut than I normally would. It's not that long. Just to give you some context at how unbelievably dumb this conversation went. You have Megan Dunn and you have two representatives from the county, and then you have Nate Nearing.
The remediation is required if it exceeds
the county.
That state standard. So the health officer is authorized to limit access to a unit that is deemed to be unsafe because it exceeds that state standard.
Okay. It exceeds the state standard. We have to get involved at the state level. That's the law. Why? Say, because it's unhealthy to live in.
Because it's unhealthy to live in.
Precisely.
Outside of this ordinance.
Outside
that's
of this ordinance.
Required.
Already is required in state law.
It's already required that if you find drug contamination that exceeds the state level, you have to remediate. Already required. So effectively, what Strom Peterson and Megan Dunn are saying is, we don't want to mandate the testing because we want to keep that a secret. We don't want to find out, because if we don't know, I mean, if a forest tree falls and no one's there and it screams out and then it catches fire, did it really even happen? I mean, if the fire thing, you know, that thing. That's basically what they're arguing.
A state standard based on...
Here's Megan.
Labs.
Yeah, labs.
Not housing.
Yeah, no, we got it.
Just to the... So that's what the, state, that's what the state standard is designed to be for labs. However, in our experience, it seems to be that the levels can reach high enough to meet that standard without there being a lab.
That's a lot.
So it does. It doesn't. It's not a very black and white line, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, to clarify, the state standard, you know, as we've heard several times, is for labs. I mean, if you have a unit that's reaching the level of a meth lab, I think we have a problem, right? So the state standard is presumably on the high end, and I would anticipate, I would hope that what standards are developed would bring that lower, if anything. So we're, I think it's a lenient standard.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it. She's mad. And she makes the worst possible argument she could in defense of her position. It's truly remarkable. Oh my gosh. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z. I'll send you a link to this story. It has a whole lot of video. It's important to see and hear and read all of this stuff, because they're the people who come up with laws and ordinances and strategies, and they're not the brightest. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. There was a tweet that was sent that has since gone viral, and people are mocking it, but they shouldn't. Because I was actually next to this guy when he sent out his tweet. Now, his name is Carl Reed, and it's important to understand the context is he is black. And in this tweet, he takes a photo, like a selfie, where he was seated on a Delta flight. And obviously, he was in the cheap seats, but he was behind me. I was in first class. And this is what he tweeted, quote, "Just boarded an early morning flight wearing my MIT gear. A seatmate looked at me and asked, 'Basketball?' I said, 'No, engineering.' 'What about me?' prompted him to think I was playing or coaching basketball." And then he did that little emoji that says, "Hmm." Now, people are mocking him because he's obviously implying that the only reason he was asked about basketball is because he's black. I will say I doubt the person thought you were playing because you're in your 40s. I'm guessing the coach part was more accurate. But he says that this is racist. And some people said it didn't even happen, but I can tell you 100% it happened, because I was on that flight with my twin two-year-olds, and both of them, in unison, my twins looked at me and said, "Papa, why can't you be brave like him?" And then they did a slow clap. And then the entire flight started to clap with them. I've never been more proud of my two-year-old twins in my life. Never been more proud. And I said to them, I will never even get to become half the man that Carl Reed is. And then I hang my head in shame for the entire flight to wherever it was we were going over the weekend. I forgot.
I'm sure that all happened. Yeah,
it did. You want to know why they thought he was a basketball coach? Because he was wearing an athletic training pullover, like the ones that all coaches always wear when they're either at practice or in between games or getting to the stadium. Like, if they're not in a suit, they're in this pullover, the trainers. That's why. That's the only reason why. And I'm assuming where they were going was probably a tournament. And the guy, trying to be friendly, turns to you, says something, and you decided to pretend that it was due to racism? Really? That's what we're doing? And it turns out he's the vice president for equity and inclusion at MIT. He's not, in fact, someone who works in engineering. He's someone who works in equity and inclusion, which is a total scam. However, when you come from that position, you are seeing life through a very specific social justice lens. Thus, I believe he thought that the only reason he was asked about basketball was because he's black. I believe he thought that. But his bias, the unconscious kind that they tell us all about all the time, led him to believe that the person next to him, who I'm guessing was white, was racist because he's white. Would he have that same exact reaction if a black guy said that? Or a Native American woman? Or a Latin, which is the new Latin X? Do you think he would have exactly the same response? Or would he not even register it as a quote-unquote microaggression?
Probably not.
Yeah. Doesn't that say more about him than it does about the guy who's seated next to him?
I think so.
Yeah. Imagine living a life where you are always thinking the way he's thinking, where you're just always miserable. Now, as someone who's always miserable, but for different reasons, I can tell you it's not great. This guy must be deeply unhappy, but he probably also builds himself up in his head as this hero who's pushing back against oppression, even the invisible kind. You see, he has not been afforded the privilege that his white seatmate has been afforded all of his life. And he had to fight tooth and nail to get that scam job of equity and inclusion vice president at a college where it's not even taken seriously by administrators. Yeah. They don't hang on every single word, making sure that they don't offend the vice president of equity and inclusion, because then they'll be canceled. All I said was, are you going for basketball? I'm sorry. I didn't know it was so offensive to you. Turns out he's a hockey fan. That's why. And he didn't guess he was a hockey fan because he's black. That was the racism. Yeah, that is racist. I will give you that. Meanwhile, there's a TikTok video that's been going viral based upon the advice that's given. It's done by a dentist out of London, who I don't think is actually British. But she said, there are three times you should never, ever, ever brush your teeth.
Here are three occasions when you should never brush your teeth. You should never brush after you've just vomited.
So immediately people are all like, what? You just vomited. Of course you're going to brush your teeth. What's wrong with you, lady?
This is because the contents of the stomach are extremely acidic and the mouth is in a very acidic state. So if you brush straight after, you're basically wearing away your enamel. You should never brush straight after breakfast. This is because when you've just eaten, the mouth is in a very acidic state. So if you brush your teeth, you're rubbing that acid on the tooth, which is a mineral, and it can wear it down. Don't brush your teeth after you've just had sweets. Wait at least 60 minutes. This is because when you've just eaten sweets, the mouth has digested it into an acid, and that acid is going to get rubbed on the teeth and destroy the enamel. So wait at least 60 minutes before you brush your teeth.
So what you're saying is the acid is not a friend to the enamel. Got it. And you're just pushing it into your enamel. Okay. I mean, can we brush our teeth at any point?
Am I allowed to say that it's a little ironic that a British dentist is giving...
How were her teeth?
They were good, so I guess that's not that ironic.
I'm just saying, this is no longer, 2019. They've discovered dentistry in London, in the UK. A few years ago, I'd be with you. But no, not anymore. I love the idea. Do people, brush? I get brushing your teeth right after you vomit. But do people brush their teeth after eating breakfast? Because I don't eat breakfast normally, I'll brush in the morning. And if I do have breakfast, it's probably going to be like an hour later anyway.
Yeah, that's how I do it usually. Yeah.
Okay. And right after eating sweets, who does that? Like right after? I guess after dessert, but it's usually an hour has passed. It's a Jason Rant Show.